listening to the Kill Radio Weekly News and Review. I'm your announcer, DJ Shy John. Top of the news today, the Harper Weekly Review, dated January 15th, 2013. As bushfires burned across southeastern Australia and the island of Tasmania, the country's Bureau of Meteorology added two new colors, purple and magenta, designating temperatures above 122 degrees and 129 degrees Fahrenheit, respectively, to its maps, and revealed that four of Australia's first days of 2013 were amongst its 10 hottest on record. In the outback town of Udanidata, gasoline was vaporizing before it could be pumped, and in the warm bungles, bushfires burned down part of an observatory. "It just suddenly comes," said a New South Wales woman, "like a whirly-twirly tornado." Air pollution levels in Beijing reached 755 on a scale of 0 to 500. Scientists declared 2012 the warmest year in the United States since 1895, and residents of Israel and Jordan contended with the country's worst winter storms in two decades. "We were waiting for our deaths, so we came out of Syria," said a man in northern Jordan's Zaatari refugee camp, "but we found our second deaths here." "Jerusalem has many colors," said Israeli President Shimon Peres. "When she is white, it is so rare, so beautiful, so unifying." A snow replica of an M-75 missile, the kind fired into Israel by Hamas in November, was built on the Temple Mount. French warplanes bombed an Islamist militant stronghold in northern Mali to prevent anti-government forces from marching on Bamako. "Let them come down onto the ground if they are men," said a Malian insurgent leader. 350,000 opponents of France's proposed marriage equity law staged a protest in Paris. "We are marriageophile," said a protest organizer, "not homophobe." Shortly before a meeting in Washington between Vice President Joe Biden and leaders of the National Rifle Association, at which the Obama administration's efforts to curb gun violence were discussed, a 16-year-old walked into his school in Taft, California, with a 12-gauge shotgun and opened fire, wounding one fellow student and narrowly missing another before being persuaded by a teacher to surrender his weapon. "We are not going to agree on these gun questions," said NRA President David Keene. "We know there's no silver bullet," said Biden. Gun rights advocate Alex Jones challenged British CNN host Piers Morgan to a Second Amendment boxing match. "I'll wear red, white, and blue," said Jones, "and you can wear your Jolly Roger." A Somali pirate named Big Mouth announced his retirement. "I have also been encouraging many of my colleagues to renounce piracy," said Big Mouth at a press conference. 2 days after the digital library JSTOR announced it would offer the general public limited home access to its archive of scholarly articles, the 26-year-old computer programmer Aaron Swartz, who was being prosecuted by U.S. attorneys in Boston for his illegal downloading of 4.8 million articles from JSTOR in 2011, hanged himself. "Hackers for right, we are one down," tweeted the inventor of the World Wide Web. "Parents all, we have lost a child." President Barack Obama announced his nomination of White House Chief of Staff Jack Lew for Secretary of the Treasury. Lew's signature, which would appear on all banknotes printed during his tenure, was variously interpreted by graphologists as evidence of discretion, imaginativeness, mysteriousness, perseverance, and religiosity. Indiana lawmakers were considering a bill Indiana lawmakers were considering a bill to make the teaching of cursive mandatory for school children. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who underwent cancer surgery in Cuba a month ago and is currently fighting a severe respiratory infection, missed his re-inauguration. We are here to be sworn into office in place of our president, said one of nearly 100,000 Venezuelans to march in support of Chavez. All of us here are Chavez, said the head of the country's National Assembly. The soldier is Chavez. The woman is Chavez. The farmer is Chavez. The worker is Chavez. We are all Chavez. Who, asked an opposition leader, is governing Venezuela? Congress was found to be less popular than Headlice, Carnies, and the rock band Nickelback, but more popular than Ebola, meth labs, and communism. Several Virginians mistook a labradoodle for a lion. Australian paleontologist examining fossil evidence of a Cretaceous dinosaur stampede concluded that it occurred underwater and that some of the dinosaurs were on tiptoe. In England, where preservationists were considering a plan to protect a Gothic cathedral from acid rain by rubbing it with olive oil, physicists determined that airlifting the peach in Roald Dahl's James and the Giant Peach would require 2,425,406 more seagulls than were lassoed by the characters in the book. Anthropologists suggested that the abandonment of Viking settlements in 14th century Greenland may have been due to their population's sense of isolation. Perhaps they were just sick and tired, said a Danish scientist, of living at the ends of the earth and having almost nothing but seals to eat. The Reverend John Graham, for who 5 decades has written crosswords for Britain's Guardian newspaper under the pseudonym Araucaria, the genus name of the monkey puzzle tree, disclosed news of his terminal esophageal cancer in a clue. Araucaria, he wrote, has 18 down of the 19, which is being treated with 13-15. In China, the Beijing News indicated its support of the Southern Daily, whose editorial staff returned to work following a week-long strike over government censorship of the press. By publishing a piece in its lifestyle section on porridge, the Chinese word for which is near homophone for daily. Hot porridge in an earthen pot, hailing from the Southland, read the article. In the lingering cold of the night, what can offer us a bit of warmth and comfort? A Pennsylvania man twice attempted suicide during his morning commute, first by jumping out of a moving vehicle, then by placing himself in front of a tractor trailer which knocked him out of his shoes, but survived and walked to work. And a Russian man died of spinal injuries after his Zorb veered off course and rolled down a ravine in the Caucasus Mountains. What's down there? Asked an onlooker. Nothing, replied another. Catastrophe. This article written by Anthony Lydgate. And now next on the news, I would like to present an excerpt from yesterday's Tucker Booth Needs a Job show here on www.killradio.org. This is from the Los Angeles Times, an op-ed piece written by Republican Congressman Elton Gallagly.
It's short.
Go ahead.
Okay, the guy's name is Elton Gallagly. He has represented parts of Los Angeles, Ventura, and Santa Barbara counties in the House of Representatives for 13 terms, folks. So this guy is a local, and he is a rep. He says, the lost art of compromise. 26 years ago, I walked into the U.S. Capitol as a newly elected congressman representing a district that stretched from Simi Valley to Gorman to Catalina Island. This month, I cast my last vote in Congress, joining 84 other Republicans and 172 Democrats to pass the fiscal cliff legislation. Being a member of Congress and representing the needs of 700,000 people back home is both an honor and responsibility. You are always aware that people around the world are watching Earth's largest democracy, with some cheering it on and some hoping it will fail. These days, I fear that those who wish us ill are rejoicing because Congress is letting itself be defined by its differences. When I was elected to Congress, my goal was to represent my constituents to the best of my ability, and I quickly realized that would mean working across the aisle. The 100th Congress was composed of 258 Democrats and 177 Republicans. I was in the minority, which meant that if I wanted to be effective, I was going to have to align myself with like-minded Democrats. In today's Congress, the 113th, the majority has shifted with more Republicans than Democrats, but that's not the biggest difference between then and now. My colleagues in the 100th Congress understood that it was our job to seek common ground and striving to do what was best for the country. Like today's Congress, we were an ideologically divided group with every part of the political spectrum represented, from the far right to the far left. But we found ways to compromise without sacrificing our core beliefs. We moved the country forward. We understood then that there was a time to campaign and a time to govern. Today, Congress is constantly campaigning. Governing has fallen by the wayside. The battle over the fiscal cliff provides a perfect example. The Biden-McConnell compromise was a lopsided bill. It maintained middle-class tax cuts, but it kicked down the hard decisions on cutting spending down the road. I voted for it on New Year's Day not because I thought it was a good bill, but because it was the lesser of two evils. Going over the fiscal cliff would have caused immediate draconian tax increases and could have thrown the United States into another deep recession. Avoiding that was important, but the economy remains in grave danger. Federal spending and the size of the government must be dramatically curtailed for the United States to balance the budget and cut the national debt. More important, Congress and the President must create an atmosphere of confidence and certainty so companies can create jobs and put people back to work. Cutting government spending alone, while imperative, will not balance the budget. We must grow the economy and create more good jobs for American taxpayers. For more than two centuries, politicians with competing convictions have found a way to reach common ground and move America forward. In recent years, we have faltered. The 113th Congress has an opportunity to once again embrace compromise and understand that our differences are also our strength. They are what has made us the strongest and greatest democracy in the world.
Thank you for that report, Tucker. And on behalf of the whole Kill Radio News team, I want to wish you all a good week. Be kind to each other and stay out of the news.